You're listening to The Comedy Cellar, live from the table on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
This is Live from the Table, the official podcast of New York's world famous Comedy Cellar Comedy Club, coming at you on Sirius XM 99, Raw Dog, and the Riotcast Podcast Network. This is Dan Natterman, and I'm here with Noam Dwormer, the owner of the world famous Comedy Cellar. He is coming to us from the great state of Maine, where he is on vacation. Imperial Ashenbrand is in Westchester somewhere. And we have with us Sugar Sammy, who we've been, trying to get for a while. So we're glad he's here. One of the hottest comedians on the international circuit. He has performed in 32 countries in English, French, Hindu, and Punjabi. He's, what is that word, quadrilingual? I don't even know. And he's one of the four judges on the French version of America's Got Talent, which is called La France a un Incroyable Talent. My accent is terrible, Sammy. And a coach on its spinoff show, Le Bataille du Jury. And he's been featured in the New York Times, Washington Post, GQ France. Declared the funniest man in France is a Quebecer, according to GQ. He is from Quebec, from Montreal. Are you coming, Sammy? Where are you now? Are you in France or Montreal?
I'm in Montreal. So I've been here since March 15th, quarantining. We had to flee France. We had to leave France in a big hurry before they shut down all the borders to come here. So,
well, you were living in France prior to this.
Yeah, we actually ran into each other in France.
Yes,
Sebastian Marx's
at
night.
The English comedy show.
Exactly. And if people aren't familiar, Dan actually does stand up in Paris. And I think you've done it in French as well, right?
I have done it in French. My bilingualism is not as impressive as you. You're a native level speaker, essentially, in English and French. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but for an American, you're pretty stellar.
For American, I'm the best there is. But, you know, in that limited discipline, as far as I know, of bilingual stand up in French and English.
How is your French so good, Dan, but your accent so bad?
Well, it's an interesting question. Accents are very tricky. After a certain age, very, very difficult. You look at Henry Kissinger, who speaks perfect English, but he talks like this. And Arnold Schwarzenegger, who still talks like the, you know, whatever he does. So, and these are people that have been living here for decades. So obviously mine is not going to be any better than those people.
So where did you pick up your French?
Well, I didn't pick it up. I learned it. I mean, pick it up makes it sound like I just kind of absorbed it. I learned it through hard work over the past 15 years. But don't be too impressed. It's mostly because I have nothing else going on. I don't have a family. My career is lackluster. So there's time to learn.
Dan, I find Perriel's weird way of speaking a lot less explicable than your French accent. But go ahead.
Perriel's what more less explicable?
Your weird way of speaking is a lot less explicable to me than Dan's accent in French.
What's my weird way of speaking?
No native born speaker talks like you. Go ahead.
Well, I think Perriel, her voice is similar to a lot of women in her demographic, but in any case.
what's her demographic?
You know, it's too broad from Westchester.
I resent that. I'm actually a Jew broad from Queens.
Okay, fair enough. Sammy, you can't say that. You're not Jewish.
You can say it.
Well, he's intersectional.
Yeah. Sammy is. I don't know if I can say it. I can think it, but I don't think I can say it.
You can say it around us.
Sammy, you're Indian. Is that correct? A Hindu Indian?
That's right. That's right. Not Indian of the North, not Indian from the South, like Kamala Harris's mom's side.
Well, we'll get to Kamala.
Yeah.
But you also speak Kamala. That is correct. I'm sorry.
Kamala Harris. Kamala.
Noam has some very strong opinions about her, but we'll get to that. But Sammy,
he can't
you also
say those, but he can think them.
You say them. They're not ethnically related. They're related to her competence and to her her record as a prosecutor. But you're also, you do comedy in Hindu and Punjabi. Hindi and Punjabi. Is it? But your Hindi, I'm going to take a guess here and say that it's not quite at the level of your French and your English.
My French and English, I think I get to practice more often. But my Punjabi, I speak every day with my parents. So I grew up speaking Punjabi. So I would say Hindi is where I'm the most rusty right now. But as soon as I get back into, if I start touring India or if I do any Indian shows, it starts coming back.
But if your Hindi is limited to your parents, then necessarily, you know, you're not going to be able to, I would imagine, unless you talk to your parents like you talk to your friends, but I doubt that you do, there's going to be a lot of vocabulary that you don't have. You know, it's to say the Hindi equivalent of I was chilling with my friends, I was chilling with my boys, you might not be able to say in Hindi because you don't talk that way with your parents.
No, but you're able to still adjust, you know, like you're able to adjust to when you got to speak to someone in the corporate world, as opposed to, you know, someone, you know, a close friend of yours or someone at the gig.
But you speak Hindi with close friends, or is it limited to parents and family?
Parents and family for now. But when I start, touring, in India or whenever I do the Indian shows, then, you know, it comes back very quickly and I'm able to adjust.
Between your English and your French, is there any difference in level, or it's both equally as perfect?
I think it depends on the time. So what happens is, like, if I'll be in an English environment for a long time, then my English gets better and my French drops off. And then as soon as I go back to France, I'll start touring Quebec, you know, after a couple of weeks, like, I'll start getting my French back, you know. So it depends on which environment, because it's a full immersion, right? So you're thinking in that language all the time. It's so like it takes a while for your brain to adjust.
It's like Dan's bisexuality.
Yeah, well, in any case, some people that are bilingual like that, like Mike Ward was telling me that he is, Mike, he's a bilingual comic in Quebec as well.
Yeah.
And he was, I think he was saying this, is that his English is not quite as good or as rich as a unilingual English speaker, and his French is not quite as rich as a unilingual French speaker. By the way, he might not have said that. Somebody told me that, but I've read that, you know, like, in other words, like, I'm all these unilingual English speakers, even though they're unilingual, they have a vast reservoir to choose from. They can speak English like a Southerner, like an English person from England. They can speak hip hop, Ebonic. There's all kinds of different ways of speaking English. It's a very rich tapestry that somebody that's bilingual might not have had the time to develop all that. I don't know if there's any truth to that.
Well, I think what happens is sometimes, like, if I'll be, like, let's say touring the States, I'll just be chatting with someone, the word, you know, one word might come to me in French first, and I'll have to translate it because I just got there. But, you know, after like 6-7 weeks of touring, then it's like I don't even think about speaking French. And the same thing when I'm in France or even when I'm in Quebec, because the French is different. The language is different in Quebec than it is in France. So, like, I'll have to adjust when I get there. And then sometimes, yeah, you're right. When you're bilingual or trilingual, quadrilingual, a word will come to you in a different language. You know, when in the middle of a sentence, you'll have to, like, work hard to find the equivalent word. So, yeah, whereas a unilingual person has no choice. They only know that word in one language.
But a unilingual person is, I was also, it's like, just there's so much, like, you know, would you know how to, like, would you know, like, that groovy is old fashioned? And would you know, like, if you wanted to talk like somebody from Shakespeare's time, could you do that? Could you imitate Elizabethan English? I mean, there's just so many things that the unilingual comedian has access to. And I wonder if who's a bilingual comedian have access to all those sorts of things. Or if you wanted to imitate an Englishman, would you say, it was a bit dodgy, I was in the lift, you know, with my mate, and you'd be able to do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could. I've toured the UK, so I was able to pick that up, you know. So it's all about immersion. It depends on where you're immersed, you know.
Okay. I was trying to tear you down a little bit. I was trying to knock you down to size a little bit, you know, but.
Yeah, because the adaptation isn't necessarily a linguistic one. It's a cultural one more than anything.
Now getting into that, Noam's been, I'm going to try to get to a topic that Noam, this is not interesting to Noam, you know, but I'll try to get in.
It is interesting. I'm enjoying the conversation.
Okay. He's zoning out right now.
No, I'm listening. I don't know. What can I offer about bilingual comedy? I'm just listening.
Do you bring the Indian, now, so you're a Canadian Indian or an Indian Canadian. I don't know if you do that in Canada. Do you have those hyphens that we have here? We wouldn't say an American Indian because that's First Nations, what you call First Nations. We would say an Indian American. Would you say an Indian Canadian?
I guess so. I mean, I don't just walk around identifying myself that way. But yeah, I guess if you had to, you could. If someone had to put out an APB on me, yeah, I'd be an Indo-Canadian running around the streets.
Well, do you hear in America, as you know, we're obsessed with this sort of thing. And of course, Kamala Harris was just... you know, she was just the VP pick for Biden, and many people are focusing on her ethnicity. And this will be the first woman of color, the first Indian, the first African-American woman. So it's a big thing here. Is it like in Canada, do you find the Indian experience as you've been in America, do you find it different there? Growing up Indian, would you say it's different? And then the focus?
Yeah, it depends on which part of Canada you grow up in. I mean, like, you know, like if you grow up in Toronto, Ontario, it's a different experience than if you grow up in Quebec City, you know. But yeah, I think mostly, you know, in Canada, that kind of thing is kind of encouraged and you know, they're very welcoming. And it's almost like, you know, get to know your neighbor, embrace every culture and, you know, make it a part of your everyday to embrace these differences rather than have them divide you, you know? So I think that's one of those things Canada stands for. You know, I think you kind of see that with Justin Trudeau and his international image. It's pretty powerful out there, you know. I think, and it speaks for itself.
So you're happy, and you don't, a lot of Canadian comics, I know they're trying to get their American citizenship or they're trying to get a green card. You're not in that category, or are you?
I mean, I'm not. I have a work visa for the States, so when I tour the States, I don't just show up illegally, you know. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, why only limit yourself to the U.S.? So I always think to myself, you know, open yourself up to the world. So I always, you know, make it a point to tour as many countries as I can and broaden my horizons and make sure that I can instead of just having the U.S., having, you know, a way more broad view of the world internationally. I mean, and I think that's what's happening anyways. You see it with Netflix, they're signing specials from Mexico, from India, from Brazil. And, you know, they're starting to become that like international voice that you're starting to see, that international, and people have an appetite to learn from other cultures as well and learn from those things. And I actually have that appetite to actually go into different cultures and see if I can connect different countries, you know? So the more the merrier for me.
There's still a sense among a lot of comics that America's still the mecca of stand-up comedy, and it's a place where you, if you're a comic, you want to come here and you want to do comedy here for the prestige value.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's definitely one of my favorite places to tour. But you know, I still tour Canada, the UK, you know, Australia, India, France. You know, I'm spending a lot of time in France. So I mean, to me, it's like it's one amongst many, but I love touring the States. One of my favorite places for sure. And you know, it's a different every circuit is different. In the US, it's very comedy club based. Then you move on to theaters, where as sometimes in places like France, it's like, you know, you prepare your one man show and then you're out doing theaters all of a sudden. You know, and you start from a small theater and you move to a big theater.
Can I ask you a question? What was it? Why did you refer to the difference between Northern India and Southern India? Explain that. Like if somebody would say that, oh, so-and-so is also from America, I don't know if I'd like to say, oh, they come from that Southern part of America. So like, what's the difference that you're bringing out there between North and South?
Well, cause they spoke about Kamala Harris and they said, that she was Tamil from the South. So that was just a fact. And, you know, I'm Punjabi from the North. So it's kind of like, you know, England does that. The Northerners, the Southerners, there's London, there's Newcastle. And I guess you guys have that too, where people say, hey, I'm from New York, or hey, I'm from the Midwest, or hey, I'm a California girl, or, you know, so I think it's just a characteristic. It's not anything that's, you know,
I don't think he meant it in the value statement, though.
I mean, I'm not buying it at all. I know he didn't. Well,
there might be an. I don't know what region considers themselves is more prestigious necessarily. You know, I mean, there are stereotypes about Southerners in the United States that are negative.
I mean, India has like one of the biggest caste systems in the world. Still, I think that you know, places like Rajasthan and. Like all of that, I think, are considered a little bit, I don't know, snootier than places like Kerala or Goa. Am I wrong?
Well, it depends. I guess whichever place you're from is the most prestigious to you, right? It's always that way.
Are you accusing him of being a part of the caste system of India?
No, I'm merely pointing out that your question actually does have some validity. I mean, I would say that the North in most places of the world have those connotations, whether or not they're accurate, including in America, right? I mean, the North is a little bit snottier than the South. We look down on them. We think that, you know, New York.
For some reason, North, like the South Bronx is you know, for some reason, the South, I don't know why.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's accurate. Don't scrimp.
Why is it? There's no rational reason that the South, that Southern things are better. In England, it's the opposite. In England, it's the opposite. The South is more prestigious, and the North, those are the hillbillies.
That's right.
So that's kind of a counterexample. But I do think that for some reason, there does seem to be a lot of, in the world, like Northern Italy and Southern Italy. It's
exactly.
Just, you know, I mean, I don't know if I examined all the regions of the world, whether Northern is usually more prestigious than Southern, but it does seem that there's a pattern. Maybe not.
Not below the equator.
It translates into all kinds of things. I mean, remember, even hip hop had East Side, West Side going on. Comics don't do that, though. Is there a rivalry between? There is a rivalry between LA and New York comics.
Well,
right?
I wouldn't say so much a rivalry. There's a snobbery amongst New York comics that we're smarter and better, and that exists, and that's based on the fact that LA
is smarter and better.
Well,
that might be.
Well, New York in general is perceived as a smarter city than L.A. You know, we're a serious city. There's lots going on here. We got banking. We got technology. We have media.
They're prettier, though. They're pretty.
You know what? I know people say that. I'm not so sure that's true.
I don't know if I'd put New York comics on TV.
Well,
you know, LA comics are beautiful. Come on, man.
And New York comics and LA comics are often the same people. I mean, Ray Romano was a New York comic until he moved to LA, and he hasn't been back in 20 years or more since his show. Seinfeld, where there's nothing more New York than Seinfeld. Well, actually, he lives here now, but for a while he was in LA because that's where TV is or was.
Rogan was in New York, wasn't he?
What was?
Wasn't Rogan in New York years ago? Joe Rogan?
I'm not sure, but it could be. So, I mean, yeah, it's often the same people that go out to L.A. and become TV stars sometimes. But the perception is that L.A. is not serious stand-up. L.A. people go to L.A. just to be on TV. People in New York are here because they love stand-up. They want to do stand-ups.
Right. Yeah.
That's so the perception. Too ugly for TV.
L.A. humidity, I don't know. What's that?
Well, the LA comics just go there to, and people in LA get on stage. It's almost like an audition for a pilot.
Yeah, that's the perception anyway. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Because why would you? What's that?
I think the irony is that everybody wants to be on TV, or most people who are in this industry want to be on TV in some capacity.
Less so, but yeah, I think so. You know, but. Yeah, so you know, but yet there are comics that are on TV, but they still live here and they go out there when they need to for television. So maybe that's the difference. You know, like Chris Rock lives here. He lives in Jersey, but he goes to LA when he needs to be there. Chappelle lives in Ohio, so I don't know. You know, that's he's right there. He's neither west nor east. But in any case, so you host the America's Got Talent of France.
I'm one of the judges. Yeah, so I'm one of the judges.
Not the host, the judge. One of the judges.
Yeah.
And you're from Quebec, so why did they pick you? Well, you know, in the American version, we have people from England, so I guess that's similar.
Well, I was, you know, when I was there, I was starting to tour France, and then you know, my my live tour started to get some traction and got bigger and bigger. And then, you know, once I became sort of a name there, they were like, okay, well, we're looking for a judge. Do you want to do it? And, you know, we had a few interviews for a couple of months, and then that was it. So
who else do you have? Probably nobody we would know. Maybe I would have heard of them. But
there's Hélène Cigara, who's like a singer. We have Marianne James. So we have two singers. And then we have Eric Antoine, who's like this magician comedian as well. So the four of us are the judges there.
And yeah. it's the same format as the American show, I guess.
Yeah, it's exactly the same format. It's one of the biggest formats in the world. I didn't know that. I think it is the biggest format in the world. They have them in almost every country now.
Yeah.
Can I'm an alumni of America's Got Talent. My latest, I was on there back in January for what's called the Champions, where they bring people back from previous seasons, and then Simon Cowell proceeded to give me an X. I don't know if you saw that or you knew that.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he get thankfully toward the end of my performance. Now, recently, he broke his back on an electric bicycle. And so you might be wondering whether I get some satisfaction out of that. But the truth is, I feel bad for the guy, I guess. I don't know if I feel bad for him. I mean, he's a...
How can you not feel bad for him? He broke his back, Dan. What the fuck's the matter with you?
How bad is it to break your back? I know breaking your neck is really bad.
He's hurt. Why wouldn't you feel bad for him?
Because he gave him a neck.
I feel bad, but the question is how bad?
Yeah. You feel bad, but not too bad. So
I mean, he will recover, I gather. Again, I don't know how serious it is to break your back. It does sound awful.
You'll recover from your ex.
But the first time you went there, you killed it. I remember that. That was like those big.
Now, that was 5 years ago. Yeah, I killed it, and then I didn't kill it. I killed it, and then I stopped killing it at a certain point. But
you also then really sort of put him in his place in a very major way.
Yeah, I did, but it didn't. Ultimately, it didn't do me much good. I said to him, Sammy, you don't know your ass from your elbow when it comes to comedy.
Nice.
He said it in a way that got a lot of laughs, and people enjoyed it. And I thought
he liked it.
And Simon enjoyed it. I thought it would at least go viral, but the truth is it hasn't. You know, it's got like 200,000 whatever on YouTube. It's not viral. It didn't really help me out. The truth is doing the Champions, in retrospect, if I had to do it again, I probably wouldn't do it again. But it's like everything.
You say that about all your sexual experiences too.
No, I don't.
Most of
them. Did they filter your material at all? Did they tell you can't do this and watch out for that? We can't.
Yeah, I did. They did. They, for example, I had a joke about fat people. Not even fat women. Fat women, I avoid talking about fat women.
Okay.
I did have.
So they're not people, right? Because they're not people.
To call a woman fat is so harsh and so devastating. That
no, because you said I have a joke about fat people, but not women.
Oh, okay. I didn't even put that together. Yeah, I have a joke about fat men. Right. About a fat guy. I joke about a fat guy checking into a hotel where there's a fitness center. And the guy ahead of him, they say, oh, we have a fitness center on the second floor. And then the fat guy goes up and he says, okay, well, here's your key and that's all you need to know. But so in other words, they don't tell the fat guy about the fitness center.
Right.
That's a summary of the joke. But in any case, they said you couldn't do that because it's mean to fat folk.
Now, what's the world come to? You can't even make fun of fat people.
You know, so they did. They did censor me with regard to that joke. And I there probably were some other things they censored me with. But so the answer is they do.
But how far in advance did they make you, did they give you the warning that you had to do that? It wasn't like right before you went on.
No, I went in there with like jokes and they said, okay, you can do this joke, but you can't do this joke, you do this joke and this joke.
But like a couple weeks before, like that day?
Yeah, I think it was a week before. But okay. then there's some last minute changes too where they rethink it, like, you know what, we're not thrilled about that joke. But that's not an issue. I mean, my jokes, I can mix and match and sub in and sub out. I don't really have to practice them. They're all practiced. So if they at the last minute say, you can't do this joke, but you can do this joke, that's not a big deal. I don't find it to be a big deal, you know. But they do that, you know.
Didn't they also tell you you couldn't do the joke about your cousin?
No, I did that one. My cousin Sheila? Didn't I do that one? I think I did. About my cousin Sheila. About having sex with my cousin Sheila. Or not having sex with her, but... But she comes over for staff. I'm pretty sure I did that one.
Can I ask Sammy a question?
Yeah, go ahead. That's what he's here for, to be asked questions.
We're experiencing at least in the Western world, an explosion of color consciousness. And I'm wondering, would you say that being a person of color in 2020 is helpful to you, a hindrance to you, or does it matter either way?
To me, it doesn't matter. I mean, look, I just do my thing on stage, and, you know, a lot of people say, is it tougher to be a comic today? I think it makes you a better writer to have a few obstacles. I think it forces you to write material, even like face topics you're not supposed to, but, you know, figuring out your way in and how to get away with it and how to make it smooth so that it can work, so that it's palpable. That's, I think, the toughest thing, but I think it's actually a challenge. It's pretty fun to do. So you're always like, okay, I want to talk about this. I know people might get mad now. How do I do this, you know, and get away with it? I think it makes it kind of fun. Like that's to me, it's a bigger challenge, you know. And, you know, our favorite comics, if you look at it, the ones that we've always celebrated are the ones who pissed a few people off, you know, back in the day. The people we always say we loved, you know, like the Pryors and the Lenny Bruces, et cetera. Those are the ones we always name. So why are we trying to do that with our comedians now? But, you know, one thing is, when a comedian is like, when you're, you know, time and distance makes it palpable. Meaning like Lenny Bruce right now, you see it as wow, that was great. But, you know, in his time, he got arrested, you know? And, you know, if you look at like Ricky Gervais doing something in England, you're like, wow, that was amazing. Or doing something, you know, getting away with it. And some people getting pissed off because it's somewhere else. But when it happens in front of you, I think sometimes it's a little more of a shock. But I think every comedian in every decade had their challenges. And I think, you know, we're not without them, and you have to almost embrace them and say, okay, now let's try to figure our way in. And I think that's kind of our job as well, you know.
Noam and I talk about that all the time, is whether or not it's worse today insofar as things you cannot say and the fear of getting canceled because you say something wrong. And I think the answer is it's worse today because of social media, but I'm not sure people are less tolerant in general, but social media has rendered things more difficult. That's my analogy.
Yeah, it's also got to be up to you. Like, how much do you care, you know? Like, how much do you care about that, and how much do you say to yourself, I don't care, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, like for me, I definitely, you know, go into topics of race, you know, sexuality, politics, and I face it. And I'm like, look, if something happens, it happens. And, you know, at the same time, I want to be able to do what I do. And my fan base loves it. And, you know, I think stand up is that place where, you know, we're the ones who are supposed to address those things first. We're the ones who are supposed to address those things first, because you never have committees filtering you. You don't have to pass it by, you know. What is it called? The FCC
Yeah.
So you don't have to go through the network. You don't have to go through it. You on stage, right? So for me, I've always had that point of view, and I've always said, you know, because people are getting a little madder about it, I've got to write, the material's got to be better. I don't think people are demanding with what you say. It's how good the material is, how good the joke is, how intelligent the joke is. I think they're more demanding with the level of material you got to bring out. I think that's good. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have more latitude because you're a person of color. Like Dan pretty much can't make jokes about race anymore.
But you're Jewish, no?
Well, we don't count as far as that's concerned. We're not considered oppressed. And we're not oppressed as a general matter.
You should argue that. That should be the top of your set. Should argue about how you're just as oppressed as the rest of us, and then you can get away with it.
Well, I could make that argument. I don't know if it would convince anybody.
You got to figure it out, Dan. You got to figure it out. I think that's the key.
But that's not really my as a comedian. I don't, you know, and maybe I should, and maybe this is the reason I'm not a bigger act. Is I don't push those boundaries. I talk about my cousin, Sheila. I talk about I don't talk about these weighty issues generally.
You used to have a joke how you'd sell a brother out for some pussy.
Well, I still do that joke. But that's not, that, that's, That's not really tackling any racial issues. That's just saying, look, I'm not a racist, but if a hot chick is racist, I'll get with her, you know, and I'll pretend to be a racist. But they, I'm not really challenging it. I'm not going up there and saying, you know, cop, like, I wouldn't even touch within 100 miles on stage, even though we touch it here on the podcast, the statistics about police brutality. And Noam brought up on a previous episode that actually there is some evidence to suggest that police do not kill black men disproportionately.
I didn't bring that up. Oh, that was somebody else.
Well, in any way, it's been brought up. Yeah. Whether it's true or not, I'd have to research the statistics, but it's something I wouldn't touch with a 100-foot pole on stage. And that's the kind of shit that I'd be afraid to talk about because I don't think the audience would tolerate it.
Yeah, well, we've been moving backwards, Dan. I mean, there was a time not that long ago where we were kind of at a place where you could really talk about anything. There was a time when really there was no holds barred. And maybe we're just returning back to a historical norm, but it's bad now, you know.
It'll come back. I think the pendulum always swings back, right? So I think we've been through political correctness in the 90s as well. I remember in the 90s, the early 90s was a big thing, you know. I remember coming out of high school, everybody's like, oh, you got to watch it. You have to be politically correct. That's when I learned the term. So I think, you know, you always have those waves of like times where you can say anything and times where people are a little more sensitive and they'll get tired of this shit eventually.
I mean, there's still some white, straight, male, white comics that say whatever the fuck they want and totally get away with it and are really...
Well, but who, for example? But they, and
who? I mean, at the sort of most...
Nick DiPaolo might maybe one example. Bill Burr,
Chris DiStefano.
I'm not sure they're saying. But first of all, I don't watch their acts. But I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what they're saying. But I don't know if they're saying anything quite as. And maybe they're not saying it because they don't believe it. But I think there's certain topics they would be hesitant to address. You know.
I'm just saying they're.
The truth is, I'm not intimately familiar with their acts.
I mean,
there's a sad reality, I really think it is sad, of something that's changed forever, which is the past used to be the past in every way. People didn't walk around with recording equipment. They didn't have the ability to memorialize something. A newspaper went in the garbage and then it faded away. A news story went. And so whatever happened, you insulted somebody, whatever it is, within 24 to 48 hours, you'd have to do a lot of work even to be able to bring it up again, to find it, to document it. Go to the library, get microfiche or something. So it just now, I mean, we're all paranoid about somebody having their cell phone recording in their pocket. There's somebody at the next table recording us. I recently had some just conversations in my house where people got scared that, well, what if somebody might be recording, you know, just like people are just paranoid. People would, you know, work in jobs and where politically incorrect things could get them in trouble. And there's no going back to that. It's only going to get worse. Your eyeglasses are going to have,
right.
You know,
but that's a function of technology, not of basic human nature. But I mean, you think, Noam, that basic human nature is less tolerant of other ideas now.
Right, but what I'm saying, so in the 90s, we may have had a period where political correctness was a concern, but it was fleeting. Like, even if you violated it, nothing could happen to you.
Right.
If the memory of what you even said faded away. You couldn't prove what you said. I didn't say that. Yes, you did. All right, whatever. I thought that's what you said. Now it's like, no, here it is. And by the way, it's all over Twitter and the whole country knows about it. I mean, just think about that too. If you have something that's bad on somebody, you could distribute it to the entire planet Earth instantly, and it does go to the entire planet Earth. You couldn't do that.
I mean, I remember the first examples of that. That's a good point. The first examples of that were like Justine Sacco. Remember Justine Sacco, that girl who tweeted she was going to South Africa, and she's like, I hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white. And then she tweeted it and then took a plane from London, and that's 10 hours later, like, the tweet went viral. She was all over the news and got fired. It's like a big, almost cautionary tale. It was like a mini documentary about her. So that happened, like, that was like 10 years ago. That was
And that's totally a joke a comedian would have told on stage back in those days. Totally a comedian. That would have been like an outrageous joke that somebody would tell.
Right.
And everybody go, ooh. And now nobody would, you know, but they would take it as a joke.
Yeah. She lost everything. I think they took away, like, they took away everything. She got fired by the time she landed.
It's
and there's a hashtag going on, has Justine landed yet? And
my God.
You know, her phone blew up. It was crazy.
I'd forgotten about that. That's a good one of those stories. I'd forgotten about that in my
childhood. Another one was Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Michael Richards. Yeah. Michael Richards was another one.
Yeah. But and, even think of it. Go ahead. Go ahead. I want to.
Go ahead. Because I had a question for you guys.
Well, even Michael Richards, which, let's see, that went, that was before cell phone, but it was, you know, it went everywhere because he was such a big star at the time. It was right after Seinfeld had ended. But even him, that night or two nights later, he went on the David Letterman show to talk about it. You know, he wasn't actually canceled. And now, when something similar, well, there was something similar that happened with Jimmy Kimmel and everybody started crying. Who was it? It was supposed to go, oh, Norm MacDonald had said some things forgiving of Louis C.K. or something.
Right.
And he got in trouble and then they canceled his appearance on the Fallon show or the Kimmel show before he went on. Yeah, yeah.
Just well, a lot of it is, and we were talking about this on the last week with, forgot his name, Jason. Was it Jason?
Justin,
I'm sorry. A lot of it is because people get scared. So if the network executives and the film executives and the comedy club owners get scared, they might overreact. So, you know, Noam could have very easily back in the Louis C.K. scandal era said, Louis, you can't work here anymore, but he didn't do that. And when Louis came, we found out that the audience was happy to see him in general, except for one or two exceptions.
Is this an American thing?
Pardon? Is it an American thing? I don't know. You can ask our Canadian in residence.
I'm asking. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dan.
No, yeah. I haven't seen much of that in Canada in terms of like what you say on stage. I mean, people have been canceled for stuff they've done off stage, like for behavior, for sure, for sexual harassment and things like that. Yes. I mean, I think that's not
just
a bad
the last
thing.
Guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch. There are a bunch of Canadian people who've had that, especially recently in Quebec. But in terms of what you say on stage, I haven't seen that in France or in Canada yet at all.
Dudenay, the French comedian that was like arrested or something, because in France you have laws there that you're not allowed to be racist.
Right.
You actually have laws that restrict, in America, they would never fly because the Constitution says freedom of speech. But in France, if you said in France, I hate the N-word, okay, would that be illegal? I'm not intimately familiar with the law there.
I don't know. I mean, I didn't really look into it because I wasn't planning on saying it. But I think with Dieudonné and with guys like that, he didn't really get canceled because he didn't have a TV series or anything like that. But they were trying to prosecute him for something he said, but he started doing shows in his own theater. So he just self-produced in terms of a stand-up. And I mean, I know here Mike Ward got in trouble for something as well, for a joke that he did about this kid here. And that was all over. And he's going to Supreme Court to fight that. But he's still invited on the TV shows. He still has his podcast. He still tours. And he's still very well respected as a comic. That's what I'm wondering. Like, is that a choice, Noam, that you have to make sometimes where people can get, like, you know, customers can get mad or someone from the industry, or you'll get lobbying groups who will be like, hey, we don't want you to book this person. You have to make that decision.
For a second, what's the question?
Go ahead.
The question is, have you ever had to make that decision because people are lobbying so hard to take a comedian off stage, off your stage?
I've never had to make that decision. I haven't had to make that end against canceling anybody for anything, and I get more and more extreme by the day, including sexual harassment. Not that I'm tolerant of sexual harassment, but I just don't believe in private retribution for perceived misbehavior of people. I mean, you see, like in Canada, it's like there's a whole blackface, you know.
Yeah, Noam, you're cutting out up there.
And we know go ahead then.
No, you're back. I'm saying
it's until Justin Trudeau shows up in blackface, and then all of a sudden we go easy on the blackface. And you guys can hear me because I want to say something else.
Yeah,
you can hear me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was telling Carrie L, I think it was yesterday, that it wasn't that long ago where really, basically, everybody met their mates at work. If you think about it, there was no internet. There was no internet dating. Where would you meet a girl? You'd meet them at work. And that, now that there's the internet, I guess, and that's supposedly the way civilized people meet, I don't know. We've made it seem like any two people who are working together who wanna, you know, flirt or test the waters about dating are somehow harassers. And this just isn't true. And what happens is probably in every organization, there's probably 100 different couples on the down low that nobody knows about, right? And then there's one dummy who went, tried to go out with some girl who didn't like it, and she turns him in, and now he's a sexual harasser. And then everybody pretends that they're not themselves banging somebody that they're working with who was open to it, so there wasn't harassment. And I just not buying it. You know, this guy McDonald's is getting sued now because he was having these consensual relationships with people at work. And I'm pretty convinced that these consensual relationships are going on in every single organization on planet Earth where they're permitted to be going on and people are denying they're going. She has stopped doing. I'm not buying it.
But there's no campaign against meeting somebody at work. The campaign is against...
No, but the thing is that when somebody then asks somebody out at work and it's not received happily, they get in big trouble and they're called out as some sort of monster, you know. There's other examples where people are, where a boss are taking out their dicks and saying, if you don't suck it, you're fired. You know, that's a whole nother thing, but that's illegal and the court system should absolutely handle that. But we're at a time now where people are scared even to think about dating each other because they're afraid they'll be accused of harassment.
Well, I haven't heard anybody like being accused of harassment for asking someone out.
I mean,
for asking someone out, being like, hey, you want to go out for a drink?
Yeah, absolutely. Or if they'll ask twice and say it was aggressively asking, or yeah, this is, it's very, or they'll get fired. There's, you know, there's policies now everywhere that you're not allowed to date. So then by asking, you're kind of like trying to violate the policy. So that can get you have good, but so you can avoid that fuck up, you know. But some dudes are idiots and they really don't know. We know these guys. Some guys will not take no for an answer. It's so clear that the girl's not into them, but they still see it. I think it's genetic. They just don't know any better. So yeah, to be clear, I'm not excusing horrible sexual harassment. I just think there's a lot.
Can we talk
lying about a lot of stuff?
We don't have much time. I do want to get to Kamala because it's such a it's such a huge story. I do want to talk a little bit about Kamala Harris, who is now the vice presidential nominee, which I was expecting Rice, but in any case, I know a lot of Indians in America are excited about this, at least from what I read online, that now they see themselves maybe in the White House or maybe as vice president. Now, you're Canadian, but since America is so important in the world, I was wondering what you think about it.
I don't care. No, I'm kidding. I think right now it's cool because she had a Montreal connection too. So a lot of Canadians are happy about that too. She lived in Montreal. She studied in Montreal for like 5 years. So everybody's Montrealers are claiming her as their own right now as well. So she studied, like she did high school here or something like that for 5 years, or elementary school, one of the two. But I think it's an interesting choice. I think she's definitely good for soundbites. I mean, she's, you know, we've seen her in the debates. I've seen her, in front of Congress. She's good at like creating moments that'll end up in media and that are good in terms of sound bites and creating news stories, you know, so and headlines. So I think it's a good choice because I think Biden, I think, is, you know, I don't think he's charismatic enough to win on his own. So I think it's almost like when you're voting for the Democrats, it's you're voting for, you know, a team of two. You're not voting for the president. You have to look at it as a team. Whereas Trump, people love Trump, love Trump.
Well, also,
Pence is just there. You
know? Given Biden's age and his lack of robustness, one wonders whether his vice president will necessarily become the president. So we could be.
Yeah, right.
No, but seriously, I mean, you know, Kamala. Win, there's a very good chance that she'll end up as president. Right. So that's another. But Noam is not. Noam, I want to know if you think that this was a wise choice politically for Biden. I know you don't like Kamala, but do you think it's helpful to his campaign? What does Harry Enten have to say, by the way? Did you talk to him? I think Noam got cut. Noam?
Hello? I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what Harry thinks. I should ask him. I mean, I don't know if it's a good choice or not. It might be. It might be. More likely to get her elected. I don't think it's a good choice. I don't think it's a good choice. But I don't think it's a devastating choice, but I don't think it was the best choice he could make.
Why do you say
that? Who would you have had there?
Well, I mean, I would not have... I actually liked Susan Rice, even though I don't agree with her politically, but I am going to just first say that I don't know why we have to buy into the idea that it had to be a woman of color. I don't like that sort of thing. And the polls showed that more than 90% of Black Americans didn't think it should be chosen based on color. So what I'm saying is that if you would zoom out to the entire group of people qualified to be president, if it wasn't limited to women of color, I would think people like Klobuchar would be a better choice. If we are going to accept the premise that it has to be a woman of color, I think Susan Rice would have been much better because she's ready to take office on January 19th. She has a lot of experience. She's has a tremendous resume. She's a woman of accomplishment. I don't think Kamala Harris has done anything. Yeah. And she was a corrupt prosecutor or a dirty prosecutor.
Yeah. Well, you see, I think people don't really vote on, they don't really vote on specifics, right? They vote on people who are inspirational. They vote on people who exude trust. So whenever you see her in debates or you see any TV appearances with her in them, you feel that, you know, you feel like, you know, she's inspiring, she's confident.
I disagree.
I see that automatically. Yeah, I saw it at the Democratic debates. We saw her, you know, she created moments in those debates where everybody else was falling asleep.
Well, let me tell you why I think you're not correct, both personally and then empirically. Personally, when she accused Joe Biden of being a racist and all that stuff, I thought that was despicable, and I was really offended by that. But then the empirical evidence is that she sank like a stone in the polls to the point where she dropped out, I think, before any primaries or after the first primary. She had almost zero support, so she did not win people over, as you're saying. She might have won over a segment of people, but I think she began to wear thin after a while, where I think you have a good moment like that and people say, oh, look at her, she seems like something. And then after three or four of them, you say, you know what? This seems a little phony to me. Like, she just seems to be like practicing these moment things and that's all she's got. But having said all that, really my beef with her is that she is widely reported to have fought to keep innocent people in prison after she knew they were innocent. And I can't process that. That to me is just evil.
But do you think most electors will hold on to that?
No, but the thing is, in America, you know, she doesn't need to run up the score in California, New York. She needs to win those 70,000 votes in the white working class swing states who voted for Obama, then switched to Trump, and now we want them to switch back to Biden. And those people, I don't think, are so enthralled with Kamala Harris. I don't think the people who switched to Trump are like, oh, good, there's Kamala Harris. I'm switching back. I don't think that's wise in that sense. I think that Susan Rice might have been good for that because some fondness for Obama. No, what?
Your sound is terrible. Maybe for next week you can get a better.
Next week I'll be home just because I'm in Maine. But the best choice would have been Klobuchar or one of these moderate Midwestern governors or senators who speak the language of swing states. That would be the normal strategy of picking a vice president.
Okay, now hypothetically, if Biden would have convinced Michelle Obama, would that work?
Yeah.
I think that would have been over, wouldn't it? Probably.
Yeah. But I don't know the polling in the swing states. It requires constant reminding yourself to say, wait a second, we're talking about Ohio, Wisconsin. Like, it's only a few states and only a few districts in those states that matter. And would Michelle Obama be the most powerful force in those states? Probably, maybe not. Maybe the most powerful force would be just a really straightforward white middle of the road or black middle of the road, but someone who identifies with that kind of middle of the road Midwestern mentality. You know, I actually don't think it needs to be white, but you know, if you're cynically trying to win back the racist vote, as it were, that voted for Trump. You're trying to win elections here. I'm not endorsing the racist vote, but I'm saying, you know, very cold, calculated politics. If you want to make a play for those people who were enticed by Trump with his immigration talk and all that stuff, then maybe you do want to have a vice president who looks more like those people, you know, in a very just like cold, calculated way. I don't know.
So do you think Trump's going to win again?
No. I don't think he is. I think he's so far behind that none of this even matters.
I think he's going to win again.
Yes, so am I. So do I. I think he's going to win again.
He's totally going to win again.
Well, if you think he's going to win again, then Kamala Harris really isn't the best choice.
The thing is,
it's not Kamala Harris against Trump. It's Biden against Trump.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. No, but the thing is that more than any other election, probably in history, people are looking at this vice president and saying, she may take over the first week in office. Like, nobody knows what's up with Biden. So they are really judging her. And if Biden was elected, and Biden ran away with it, presumably because he was moderate. And people say to themselves, well, I voted for him because he's a moderate. But if he may be gone by February and the person and his vice president is exactly the person I didn't want to vote for, that sounds like a bad strategy to me.
Yeah, but I think there's no one can save Biden from being Biden. You know what I mean? Like, I think no matter who you would have put there, it's going to be, people are either voting for Trump or against Trump. That's what the election is. That's what the election was the last time. It's pro or against Trump. It's not Trump or Biden. And that's why I think Trump has a better chance, because he has his bases, actually, his votership are passionate about him. No one's passionate about Biden.
And the thing is Kamala, you know, if it were Michelle Obama, I wonder if he would inspire black people to go out and vote. She would inspire black people to go out and vote. I don't know that Kamala's going to do it.
They don't need the black vote.
Well, if they don't need that one, I guess that's another story if they don't need the black vote.
Can I ask a question? Is everybody looking at the United States for years now from your end of the world, like it's, and especially now with this whole COVID thing, like we are just like the biggest fucking disaster nightmare on the planet?
Yeah, we're actually happy that there's a travel ban and you guys can't come see us.
Well, is that true?
Sorry?
Is that true?
No, I was just joking. But
I wouldn't be surprised. But, and that's the thing, yeah, right?
I'm sure there is a lot of the world that does feel that way. But you know, I think it's fun to have you guys here as tourists as well.
We,
you know, get that.
We are beloved, Perry. I'll answer your question.
Are you?
Yes, we are. They first of all, we're still, for all our faults, we're still a huge destination for immigrants, and we're still a pop cultural center. And when I go to France and talk to the comedians there, they talk about our comedy, and that's just in our little world of stand-up. But I can tell you that they still consider America the center of stand-up comedy.
Well, I wasn't referring to just comedy, though. I was referring to more the world of...
I'm just saying we're still the land of Instagram, the land of Facebook. We still set the tone. We're still DJing this party, you know. Am I right, Sammy?
Yeah. I mean, look, they're good. There's good and there's bad, right? So when you're the biggest, you know, there are going to be people who are going to watch you all the time, and they're going to admire some of the things you do, and they're going to frown upon some of the things you do. And yeah, certain things politically, obviously, internationally, people don't adore America for. But like Dan was saying, pop culture, music, Hollywood, I mean, all of this.
I'm not talking about that stuff, though. I'm talking specifically about politics and now COVID, which I could argue is related to politics.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I think politically, worldwide, obviously, I think a lot of people, you know, it's not the country that's seen as the most politically savvy to them right now. But you know, a lot of other advantages. Yeah, but politically, yeah. I remember when Trump won, I was in France. It was a period of mourning in France. There was like 2 days where everything was quiet. People couldn't believe it.
But that shows you the power of America, you know, that people are so concerned with what goes on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Obama won, black people around the world saw it as a victory for them, you know. So
yeah, totally. And then when Trump won, people around the world saw it as a tragedy for all of us.
Yeah,
many well, did, others didn't, you know. But
yeah, I guess whatever steps America makes, you know, they resonate throughout the world and they affect the rest of the world. I mean, you guys hold a lot of power in every way, monetarily, militarily. You know, you guys hold a lot of power. So with that comes a lot of scrutiny. I think it's normal to see when, you know, when the world feels safe that America's in good hands, you're gonna get the applause. And when it feels like, you know, America isn't in good hands, you're gonna get a different reaction.
How are we doing on Quebec separatism? Is that issue still alive? Very quickly, we don't have much time.
I think it's pretty dead now. It's calmed down, but lots of other issues here. You know, definitely lots of other issues. Immigration's an issue here as well. Integration's an issue here. It's huge right now. So there's a lot of that going on. That talk, you know, amongst other things going on. So politically, it's still, you know, it's still pretty charged up with a lot of issues.
Yeah, well, this is one of the things that Perry L., I think, doesn't fully think about. Like, and I don't even know the answer, but like Perry L., you know, hates the idea that Trump wants to control the border. But I don't necessarily think that plays so badly in a lot of other countries. That plays a lot worse in America than I think in a lot of other countries. They're like, yeah, of course they should control the border. We control our border. We have more immigrants in our country than we want. So they're not furious like with Trump because he's trying to control immigrants in America. So don't think that, you know, other countries necessarily see it through your eyes. You know, they I think what they all agree on is that he's kind of a buffoon.
Right.
But I don't think they react as so negatively to some of the policies as you do.
I don't necessarily, for the record, have an issue with controlling the border. I have a very big issue with how the border is controlled.
Sammy, you ever get to New York?
Yeah, I headlined Caroline's in February.
How come you didn't stop by the Cellar?
I'd love to. I'll reach out next time. I'm usually not in town long enough, so I come into headline, so I'm there for, you know, a couple days before doing press. But I'll come in next time and just, you know, spend a week.
He comes in the headline, so he's not just hanging. So he's busy, you know, he's not just hanging around.
Come after the show. I want, there's a lot of things I want to tell you, but I can't tell you in public.
All right. No, I'd love to stop in. I'm going to make an effort to come to New York when all this is over to just hang out and maybe, you know, play some, quarter sets. Yeah.
By the way, my wife is Indian, but you're not going to like this. She's from Trinidad.
I have an uncle from Trinidad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
She's Trinidadian.
They
Indian.
Call them Tobago.
She's from Trinidad, right? Because they don't like people from Tobago.
They call it Trini. That's what they got. It's not a tranny, which is a bad word. Trini. Trini is a Trinidadian, I believe. That's the slang. A Trini.
Okay. I'm going. I got to go.
Okay. Thank you, Sammy. This is, I mean, if you want to plug your...
Where can we find you?
Plug away. All right, Sugar Sammy everywhere. SugarSammy.com. Sugar Sammy on Facebook, on Instagram, and on Twitter.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Okay, you can contact us at podcast@comedyseller.com.
And
Perry L normally gives the Instagram address, but she's frozen solid. So we'll see you next time on Live from the Table. Thank you, everybody.